Now, I'm delighted once again to be joined by Mike Davis at the Raleigh Town Museum. And today we're going to be examining the establishment of the system of turnpike roads. First of all, welcome, Mike. Happy New Year. I think this is the first time we've seen you in 2024.
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott. It's always a pleasure to come over from Raleigh to Brentwood to see you. And
how kind of you to say that. Anyway, let's start with the basics. Just what were turnpike roads?
Okay, Scott. Well, put simply, they were toll roads which were designed to collect money from the users, which was to pay for the upkeep and the repairs. The name turnpike actually comes from the movable pole barrier, originally used by the toll collector before gates were installed. The poor bitterly resented having to pay to use these roads, and there were many anti-turnpike riots. And just to mention, if I can, Scott, I may mention it once or twice, that a local author, Noel Beer, has written a definitive booklet on the subject, copies of which just happen to be available in the Raleigh Town Museum, opened on a Wednesday, Friday and Saturday.
Oh, you got that in neatly, yes. So how and why did they come into being?
Well, if we go back to the year 1555, by an Act of Parliament, individual parishes were made responsible for the upkeep of roads within their boundaries. Parishioners were obliged to work 4 days each year, no pay, to maintain these roads in good condition. A parish surveyor was elected every year to supervise this, and the materials were obtained by raising a charge on the more prosperous parishioners, whether they used the road or not. Hmm. This was fine whilst roads were used by pedestrians or riders of horses, but once heavier through traffic, such as carts, became more prominent, these caused damage. But the perpetrators were not liable for this. They could not be fixed by the ordinary measures. Should I mention here, Scott, potholes.
Yes,
they were even around
do.
In those days, let alone today's. So in 1663, the first Turnpike Act was introduced, but the number of Turnpike Acts increased dramatically between the years 1751 and 1772, by which time trusts covered over 11,500 miles of road in the country. The last Act was passed in 1836, by which time no less than 942 Acts of Parliament had been passed, covering some 22,000 miles of road, around of the fifth of the total road network.
And just how did the Acts work in practice?
Well, indeed, the Acts authorised a trust to levy tolls, a fee, on those using the road, and that income was used to repair and improve the road. They could also purchase property to widen or divert existing roads where necessary. But it's important to note that the trusts were not-for-profit organisations, and maximum tolls were set. The turnpike was the gate which blocked the road until the toll had been paid.
So looking locally, just how many trusts were authorised for our county here, Essex?
Yes, well, a lot of the detail can be found in the book that I've mentioned about Noel Beer, mm-hmm. but actually there were 15 trusts established between the years 1695 and 1808. Indeed, in 1695, a Turnpike Act was introduced to cover routes between Shenfield and Harwich, and by 1750, most of the main roads out of London had been turnpiked. In 1746-1747, the Rochford Hundred branch of the Essex Turnpike Trust was formed. It was made up of 42 acting trustees, covering roads between Raleigh and Rochford and Raleigh to Lee via Hadley, and they met many times, normally in the local pubs, to hold their regular meetings to discuss work that needed to be done.
That sounds popular. So who was actually responsible for establishing the toll gates and the tolls themselves?
Indeed. Well, the number and positions of the toll gates were left to the trustees. They, of course, had local knowledge of the most used crossroads and thus established at strategic points as to catch the maximum number of travellers. Indeed, some toll gates proved extremely successful. For example, those established between Hadley and Raleigh at Four Wants Way, now known better as Victoria House Corner, there was a gate, and another gate for the London Road in Hadley. These produced such an income that the Trust were able to finance the repairs without the need to borrow against future income. At Raleigh, the King's Highway, now better known as the A129 from Wickford, passed along London Road and at the top of London Hill in Rayleigh by Holy Trinity Church. The highway divided with one route to Hockley along the Hockley Road to Rochford and the other along the High Street to Hadley and Lee.
But presumably there would have still have been people who could find a way round and use alternative routes to bypass the tolls. So was any action taken to deal with that kind of situation?
Indeed. Even in those days, Scott, people were very creative and they could avoid paying a fee or a toll or whatever it is. They would go out of their way to do so.
Hmm.
But absolutely, indeed, some people were found to be bypassing the Hadley Gate by using Dawes Heath Road. So an additional Thundersley Gate was erected at the crossroads with Dawes Heath Road and the Hadley to Rayleigh Road near the Woodman's Arms Public House. This was known as the Thundersley Side Gate and stood a mile north of the Hadley Gate. This proved to be so successful that the original Hadley Gate was only needed to control traffic from South Benfleet and was later moved further east.
So does anything remain of the old turnpike roads in Essex? And what part did milestones play in road travel?
Indeed, milestones, one of my favourite subjects, Scott. To answer the last part of your question first, milestones clearly provided information to travellers about how far away their destination was. And indeed, we are fortunate to have many surviving examples, particularly between Rawrath and Rochford through Rayleigh. And I believe it or not, there is a Milestone Society of Great Britain. And it may not surprise you, Scott, to know that I'm actually a member of that society. Incidentally, from 1767, mileposts or milestones were compulsory at all turnpikes, not only to inform travellers of direction and distances, but to help coaches to keep schedule and for the charging and changing of horses at the coaching inns. Incidentally, the distances were also used to calculate postal charges before the uniform postal rate was introduced in 1840. Scott, can I just mention that there are a number of milestones still in the local areas, and they're really an integral and a romantic part of our roadside heritage. Almost coincidentally, I would say, on Friday when I was in the museum, a member of the public came in to me and said, "Mike, thought I'd let you know that there's a problem with a damaged milestone, number 38, on the road to Rochford, just outside a lovely significant property that most of your listeners may have heard of called the Lawns, owned originally by the Keddie family. And I went out yesterday to investigate, and it appears that a vehicle may well have clipped it because it was lying on its side. It's quite big, it's made of Portland stone and it weighs an absolute ton. And I'm currently putting a team of four colleagues together so we can go and replace it in its rightful place."
You're going to do that yourself, with your four colleagues?
Yes, indeed. We are very mindful of the fact that some of these milestones are Grade 2 listed structures registered with Historic England. So we have to be very careful and we make sure we comply with the best practice as arranged through the Milestone Society to make sure that we comply with our roadside heritage. And we certainly will do that.
And more careful, I would suspect, then, than the driver who actually demolished this stone.
Indeed. I mean, it probably did more damage to the car or the vehicle than it did the milestone. There's no chips or cracks on it, but it's been there 250 years, and I hope it's there for a remaining 250 years.
Great stuff. So what have you got coming up in the museum at the moment?
Well, I was hoping you were going to ask me that, Scott, because I'm a busy chap at the moment, because after I finished at the side of the road yesterday, I moved an original 1,000-year-old 10-foot timber, the last timber to come into the museum from Rayleigh Castle, as an integral part of our Rayleigh Castle exhibition. And, of course, you know from previous talks that Rayleigh Castle was the only castle in the county of Essex mentioned in the Domesday Survey. We have a range of exhibits and exhibitions during the year. In March, we've got a small railway exhibition. Later in March, we've got a lovely talk on Sunday, the 17th of March, by a Rochford historian, Paul Taylor, on the photographs of Edward Francis, a very well-known local chap. And it was he, in actual fact, who donated the National Rayleigh Mount to the National Trust in 1923. In the summertime, we're going to concentrate on the schools and things for the children to do. But we've got a lovely Titanic exhibition in April.
Ah, you did one of those that last year, did you not?
Indeed, but it's concentrating on the Essex connection with the Titanic, including the Rayleigh connection with the RMS Titanic. In September, we've got a very, very, very popular exhibition on for 3 days on historic maps of Essex, including many originals, 1594 strip maps, absolutely wonderful, with an exhibition of globes and atlases and books. That's going to be quite fascinating. And we finish off the year, as we always do, with our tradition in the museum. November, we commemorate Remembrance and all the wars. Right. And then in December, we lighten the load with a lovely Christmas exhibition. We've had Tudor ones, Edwardian ones, so let's see what we have this year.
Great stuff. OK, thanks for that. And what are you planning to come and talk to us about next time?
Well, I've been coming quite a while now, Scott. Thanks to you, and thanks to all your... I think that one of the fascinating parts of our lovely history of our town of Rayleigh is the martyrs who were burnt at the stake in 1555 for their religious beliefs, and the history of the monument that was erected there on the 23rd of September 1908, and the whole history of the martyrs, Fox Book of Martyrs, and all the history of that. Fascinating part of our history.
Good stuff. We'll look forward to that. Thank you very much indeed, Mike.